I'm a philosopher, but I'm not going to speak from a disciplinary perspective because I'm wedded to interdisciplinarity.
That's a good point.
But I am also wedded to aesthetics being always political. And I want to defend that and insist. I think everybody's sort of said that, really. I also want to start by expressing my agreement with the very first paper about how the aesthetics of non-European countries have tended to be seen, and is still seen, always through a European stroke American framework. But I wanted to say that I think it's even clear in the cases in which there has been supposed to be an influence from east to west. And I'm thinking here specifically to do with the history of Japan, for example, which is a very different history than the history of India, because it was open to Europe earlier, so 15th, 16th century, then closed off until the 19th century. And interestingly, the notion of fine art was introduced into Japan through a Hegelian, Fenollosa, who also influenced Buddhism and its development in Japan, which is very, very interesting. So, but that, you know, there's so many Western important modernist artists and architects and designers and fashion designers that declare being influenced by the Japanese. But nevertheless, if you think about the frameworks through which we judge their art, we're still judging them in terms of Western and often modernist categories. So it's an extremely intractable kind of problem. I was recently asked to look through the headings and subheadings of a second edition of the University of Oxford's Encyclopedia of Aesthetics to comment on their categories. And I was trying to think how you could add to them in such a way as to, say, cover Japan in a better kind of way. And I just couldn't do it because the frameworks that they had were already so so narrow in terms of the way the categories of art were judged that it was hard to add anything. At the same time, it was also difficult to ask to add anything to do with feminist art. They had loads of stuff to do with the feminine, but in terms of sexual difference, there was actually, it was very hard to add in things to do with the local, the specific, and the historically precise. One thing that has been bothering me through some of the discussions today, not all of them, but some of them, is the use of the term aesthetic and the tendency to read it as art or the history of art or taste and the history of taste. And I sort of want to defend a much stronger notion of the aesthetic, where it comes into existence not really till the end of the 19th century, so not with Shaftesbury really, but really with Kant. And it's not just to do with what you like and what you don't like, it's to do with making an individual judgment about it being good, irrespective of whether or not you personally like it or don't like it. Now, Hannah Arendt wanted to use that kind of notion of aesthetic judgment in order to build a politics. So her final books published after her death on lectures on Kant's political philosophy tried to build on this notion of the sensus communis, and we had, I'm not going to go into that because Simonetta talked about it in a way in her talk about the beautiful. So Hannah Arendt privileges this notion of the beautiful. On the other hand, the other really, really important category, there are two main important categories in the history of aesthetics. One's the beautiful and the other's the sublime. And the sublime is not universalizable in the same way that the beautiful is. The sublime is open only to those who've had an appropriate moral education and are of the right type, that they can transcend their subjective feelings, feelings of fear. And in the sublime, it's not really to do with the sacred, it's to do with the encounter with the other, with the indefinite, with that which transcends understanding, transcends language, transcends that which we have the vocabulary to speak about. And so the sublime is the place where, you know, a lot of the debates about how to deal with difference take place in modern and indeed postmodern culture. And I sort of want to bring in a mention of Lyotard, who is the person who talks most about dissensus in a postmodern category, but in a way that is more open to cultural differences, I think, than Rancière is. Now, in terms of the history of the sublime, it was both gendered and raced. Women were supposed to be capable of the response to the sublime or creating it, but should not do so because they shouldn't transcend fear, which is what the sublime involved. It was also raced and made ethnically closed, particularly in relation to so-called Oriental peoples, who were supposed not to have the capacity to respond to the sublime. And so the history of aesthetics, I think, needs to be thought of in terms of not just the beautiful, but the sublime and other categories as well, like the grotesque, the picturesque. You know, there's a whole range of different categories that are used to describe objects, and to be precise about the way in which they're both including and excluding of certain categories and races and types of peoples. And I think I'll just stop there.
Well, thank you.